Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9, tonight with your host, Hal, and me, Alan. On tonight's program, Hal will be chatting about his experience with visiting America and about his observations about American culture, specifically American attitude to masculinity and its correlation to homophobia. Once again, we have another great discussion coming up tonight on Orange Ribbon, so please stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon with Hal and Alan. That track you just heard there was American Life by Madonna, which probably sounds familiar to a lot of people.
And I think it's important that you said that it's got it's called American Life.
Yes.
Because we're going to talk about America tonight.
Yes.
And it just so happens, being a little bit, I guess, different, all the music for tonight is got America or American in the title.
Yes, we specifically went there. It's let's hope that it all works out.
Well, we'll see how we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, firstly, we were expecting to have Hugh in the studio with us tonight, but unfortunately Hugh is taken rather ill this afternoon, which is not good, given that Hugh flies out on 4 weeks' holiday tomorrow evening. So, Hugh, we do hope that you get yourself better before you have to fly out tomorrow night. Otherwise,
well,
it could be rather awkward.
I had a suggestion, but I don't think it's appropriate to go on air with that suggestion.
So, Hugh, get well between now and tomorrow night, and we hope you're feeling much better. And enjoy your trip away. I know you're going to India to catch up with a couple of former Orange Ribbon presenters for a big birthday party bash that's on up there, and then off to Scotland. I think you said that you were heading off to France, I think.
He's a bit of a jet setter, isn't he?
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, back to tonight's topic, and firstly, what's your fascination with America?
It seems
from my recollection of you when you were with Orange Ribbon a few years ago, you had a fascination with America then as well. What is the fascination?
It's not a fascination.
I'm sure it is.
Moving right along.
Is it the men?
Let's not go there, shall we?
Oh, I thought that'd be an interesting topic.
No, I mean, it's more of the fact that I have family, like extended family members in America, and I do have a tendency of visiting America every so often. Probably every 2 to 3 years, I would make my way back to America for another visit. So as a result, I kind of, you know, the custom officer might actually recognize my face by now.
So where do you, are there specific areas that you traditionally, I mean, obviously where the family's located.
Yeah. It's because the family is actually spread out quite, like, across the West Coast and the East Coast. So, like, on the West Coast, I have families in L.A., in San Francisco. And then on the East Coast, I've got family in we call it a town, but it still has, like, 3 million people in it.
About the size of Melbourne, almost.
Yeah, you know, but they consider it to be small over there. Called Charlotte, North Carolina, where I've got lots of aunties and uncles and cousins that lives there. And so I visit that quite often. And as a result, I've kind of got into the rhythm and got to know the country a little bit better than, say, the average tourist that goes over to America who just visits L.A. and spend 5 days at Disneyland or something like that and visit all the different theme parks and whatnot. But as for me, because every time I go over there, I try and make a point of visiting some other American city aside from the one that has families in it as well. So over the years, I've actually got racked up quite a few American city in my travel.
Do you have any particular favorite areas or states or cities?
I would say that Boston and Chicago are favorites of mine. So is New York, although New York can get on your nerves sometimes.
I had a bad experience in New York many years ago, and that unfortunately turned me off, unfortunately. But
I guess at the same time, I wanted to actually put a little disclaimer on tonight's topic, in the sense that I wanted to, you know, if there's any American listening, hope I'm not, I'm making some observation based on my experience of America. So they are very personal experience, and as a result, it kind of, the way I interpret things are really my own version of things, and it, you know, you might not agree, and if you, I hope you don't find that offensive, because I'm not a very upset. And then I'm a very charming and polite person. So,
gentleman. Yes,
gentleman. So, therefore, but in any case, so I just want to get that out there first so that we don't, you know, accidentally offend somebody out there.
So, when you go to the US, how long do you traditionally spend there? If you go every 2 or 3 years...
The shortest time I've been to America would be 3 weeks, and the longest time would be 2 months.
2 months.
But that was back in my uni days when had time. Now
I was going to say, if you're working, that could be a could be a problem.
Yeah, no. I mean, to put things into perspective, just this year, I was over there for 3 weeks, and
this year we're talking
as in
2010.
I left Australia on like the end of December,
and I was actually
in America for a bit of January.
Right.
So that was my most recent trip to America.
In the cold period, were you in any of the cold states?
Yes, I was, and it was the first time I saw snow falling. It was very pretty. And then I find out about the airport situation, and that kind of completely kills off any joy I get out of seeing snow falling.
Do you know the thing that scares me about those cold places, such as the US and Europe as well? I have, in all the years that I have been flying in various places around the world, although a lot, admittedly, has been up around Southeast Asia and Southern Asia.
Funny about that.
But in all the times that I've flown at various places around the world, I have never flown in snow. What scares the hell out of me is all the snow on runways and having to get frozen up bloody flaps on the planes and all that thing, or potentially, that scares me. I would hate to land in a snowstorm or something like that.
Well, you know, I was actually flying the day that underwear bomber was actually on that flight.
Oh, were you? Well, on your flight?
No, of course, not on my flight, but I was flying the same day that he was flying. So when I actually arrived in Chicago, it was all over the news in the hotel about this, you know, underwear bomber. But aside from that, I think slowly I'm getting used to that whole thing about flying in the snow and stuff.
It really bothers me. We're digressing from the topic, but one of the scariest experiences I've ever had in a flight was between Auckland and Honolulu many years ago, where we hit a wind shear in the middle of the night, and the plane dropped, God knows, I don't know, it's felt like we felt 2,000 feet in about 5 seconds. Yeah. It was in the middle of the night, everybody just gone off to sleep, and everything was in darkness, and then suddenly there was a slight shudder of the aircraft, and then it just fell out of the sky. Oh, you've never seen 200 odd people wake up in such a hurry as when that occurred. I don't know whether you've had any scary experiences.
No, actually, I've been very lucky, touch wood, or laminate, which I'm touching at the moment. I've been pretty good. So I haven't had any of that sort of experience. But getting back to the thing, last year I also went to America, and I was there for 6 weeks then. So as you can see, it's, for me, traveling to America has become a very regular kind of occurrence, and hence kind of, I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I do have a bit of experience.
You've made some observations and you've got some opinions. So.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, well, let's come back and talk about those observations and opinions. This is Orange Ribbon. You're with Howe and Alan tonight, and we're talking all things America.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
The voice of Don McLean, and continuing our American theme tonight, or Howe's American theme, that is the very well-known American pie, goes back an awful long time.
Yes.
Almost before your time, I think, isn't it?
I think so. I'm very young, you know. All of these songs are before my time, even that Madonna song.
Oh, come on now.
Just kidding.
Anyway, we're talking about your experiences and observations about America. And you seem to hold the view that there are many different images of America or perceptions of America as you have seen them. Tell us about it.
I think in Australia we do get a very warped view of America in a sense that it's all based on a lot of TV shows and you know, Sex and the Cities, Will and Grace, any of the show that is, you know, between L.A. or San Francisco, and then all the show that is actually based in New York. And so we've got this view that America is basically California and New York, and that's it. And there's nothing in between. But the actual fact is that America is, it's sort of like what I call it, is like the United States of America is sort of like the European Union. You actually have like different states are almost its own country. The mentality of the people, the way they do things, the way they act, you know, to tourists even. I mean, I think that I find this to be a very obvious thing this time, because this past trip that I've just made to America, I actually raced through a lot of cities. I mean, my first stop was Honolulu, and then it was San Francisco, and then San Jose, and then Chicago, then Boston, then New York, then Charlotte, and then back to New York. So I've actually, you know, in a very short, like, it's only 3 weeks that I was away, and in that very short time, I actually get to experience snippets of all different places in America, and it became really obvious to me the differences between each of these cities.
In what way? Examples.
Okay, example. The attitude of the people. In Hawaii, people are super friendly to the point where you kind of think, oh my God, why are you so friendly to me? You don't need to be so friendly. I'd only known you for the, you know, 5 seconds. And it's, so you know, that that's that attitude. In San Francisco, the people are very relaxed and very chilled, and they're friendly, but they're also very kind of laid back, you know, anything goes kind of thing. In Chicago, the people are friendly, but a little bit reserved. In Boston, it's very, like, the people are abrupt, but they are actually very efficient and friendly. It's like, even though that they've kind of, you know, they don't say more than they absolutely need to say. It's like there's no long-winded conversation, that flowery conversation that you get in other American city. It's just, you know, they just get the message across. It's very efficient. And then in New York, well, New York is very, well, I mean, I guess they seek tourists in New York, so you get a very, you can get a very rude kind of reaction from people. I mean, there's also some very nice people in New York, not discounting that fact, but it's just the way that the people are. And Charlotte, well, that's in the South, and, well, that's Southern attitude. And
But do you become aware of that Southern attitude and the perceived, at least as we see it from a distance, the ultra conservative, anti-blank, anti-gay, you know, all that usual sort of stuff.
Yeah. So it's somewhat like it's really kind of strange, because, like, literally as soon as I got on the plane that goes from New York down to Charlotte, I kind of had to psych myself up and become this very prim and proper
non-gay boy.
Non-gay boy, in case I get leech or something. it's almost like subconsciously I'm already doing this. And then when I'm in Charlotte, I have to be very, you know, the best behaved Asian person there, just in case, because I don't want to give these people any reason to kind of reinforce stereotypes or anything like that. Because, like, when I'm in New York, I just, like, you know, do whatever I want, and I'm much more myself. While I think it's a lot of this kind of pressure that's placed on me because I'm in, say, you know, like in a southern state, and I have to act in a certain way to A, not draw attention to myself, and B, not make life more difficult for the people that lives there. Kind of thing.
As obviously Asian as you are physically in appearance, is that an issue in southern states? Were you aware of it?
Yes, because literally you do find that you do get treated differently down there. The people are a lot more abrupt. It's like you go to a department store, you ask for service, they'll still serve you, but they're not as friendly, or this is my experience anyway, to you as they would to a white person. And similarly, they would serve a black person differently to the way they serve me as well. So it's all very subtle. It's nothing is ever actually explicitly talked about. But you can see there's a bit of condescendence in their tone or in the way they speak to you. It's a very subtle, patronizing way that they act when you, like, you know, if I have, like, oh, I like that watch, can I try that on? I said, oh, certainly, but they said it like as if, like, you're a child and they speak very slowly. And, and you just sit there and you think, you know what? I don't think I want to buy anything from this place anymore.
Why did you go to Charlotte?
I have family there.
Oh, you do have family there?
That's the only reason
which,
why
strange.
I would go
Well, that's
there.
What I was wondering. And then, which is even stranger than given what you've just explaining. Mm. How come you've got family there, and why do they stay there? If that's
I think in some way, when you're a refugee, you beggars can't be choosers. You go where you're accepted. And my aunt, at one stage, you know, in a refugee camp somewhere, got accepted into America, and the family that accepted her lives in the South. And I mean, that's a very it's a great family that she, you know, was willing to you know, like foster family sort of scenario that took my aunt on. And as a result, because my aunt was there, she kind of spent most of life there, and then when she finally got the rest of the family over, that became the city they all stay at, and they've kind of...
So they've sort of got used to living in this sort of conservative environment, actually,
and
adjusted
it's
accordingly.
Like, and it's also like, you know, the case where, oh, if we've got guests coming over and the guest is a white person, they would scrub the house to, like, sparkling clean and make sure that there's no Asian food smells anywhere kind of thing. And so make sure that we don't want the white people to think that we, you know, are messy or something like that. And it's and so, like, you know, they get stressed and I get
it's
stressed.
It's a form of racism.
It is.
It's a form of racism.
And it can be quite tiring for me as well to be in that sort of environment. But I do love my aunts and uncles, and so I do tend to visit them often and kind of put up with this.
Mm. Presumably, kind of. You didn't have anything to do with any of the gay scene or bars or clubs or anything.
God, no. I'm too scared to even walk down the street, for God's sake.
So how long were you in Charlotte?
I was there for, like, every time I go to America, I usually spend, like, about half my time in Charlotte. Because of the aunties and all of that. So
you spend a reasonable amount of time. It's not like a day or two or three.
No, you're talking about
a week or two or three.
Like, this time it was a week, and last time I was literally there for a month. And,
oh, goodness.
And so it's you know, I get to know the Charlotte Costco very well.
So the gay boy goes back into the closet for a few weeks.
Yes.
This is Orange Ribbon. You're with Howe and Alan tonight, and we're talking about American experiences.
Gay and Lesbian Radio, Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. That track was Kids in America by Kim Wilde.
Continuing the American theme and music tracks that have America or American in the title. Talking about America and your experiences in America, happiness, how... I'm going to digress a little bit. One of the things that my observation, having not spent much time in the US myself, is they seem to be very introverted. I mean, their knowledge of the rest of the world seems to be fairly limited. Now, I know I'm being very generalistic here. I accept that. But, I mean, a lot of people don't even know where Australia is, let alone, you know, or if you do say you're from Australia, they'll say, oh, that's next to Austria, isn't it? Or next to Switzerland or something like that. I don't know. What's your experience? Because the news tends to be very local, very nationalistic.
It's everything is very nationalistic. It's very patriotic, is probably one way to put it. They've got everything is about, like, how great America is. Therefore, if America is so great, why do we need to know anything else about any other places? America is enough. And as a result, it becomes this very insular place. And it's actually, it becomes, like, it's not just that. I mean, like, people, like, attach themselves to certain places and they don't actually go out of that place. You know.
Are they happy?
I think it's the ignorance is bliss sort of scenario where they don't know anything else, so therefore they are happy with what they've got in some way. And like, you know, you've got this culture of, like, you know, people who actually move interstate to study at university and stuff like that, but that's a different subset of people. And also, America is a very segregated place. I hate to use that word, but I think it is actually very segregated. You actually can very quickly see, you know, they keep talking about America being a melting pot. It's not really true, or that's not the perception I have anyway. Because, like, if you, like, all you need to do is just travel on a train, if there is public transport in the city that you're at anyway to begin with, but if there is, and if you travel on a train, you can very clearly see that the demarcation line or the boundary between, like, a rich and a poor area, because it's very obvious, and you know, there's a rich area would be a very well placed, you know, everything is, the streets are clean, the buildings are proper, everything is pristine, and then you have the poor area, and it's all could be on the very same train line, and it's not like, and it's like, it hits you suddenly. It's almost like there's a street that is the boundary, and on one side everything is pristine, and on the other side everything is run down. And there's no graduation between, like, blurring of the two or anything like that. It's like you're either on this side or you're on the other side. And there's no, you know, there's no grey area. It's very black and white.
You've sort of made the comment that the pursuit of happiness is written into their constitution. What do you mean by that?
I hope I'm actually right. If someone actually knows this for a fact, you can, you know, call in or write in and correct me. But it's to do with, like, everyone has a right to be happy, which, I mean, it's a very noble concept. And I think I myself think that it's worth, you know, pursuing happiness. But I think they take it to the extreme level where I should be able to do whatever I want. And I don't care about how you feel about it. There's no sense of, like, it's not communism, no, not communalism or something like that. But it's more like it's the way that it is acted, and it's like, you know, if I want my coffee, I want it right now. You know, you must give it to me right now. Or if I want to walk across the street, I will walk across the street right now. There's no. So I guess the one word is, I mean, it's a kind of say a bit of a derogatory term, but there's no common courtesy that I find. It's like, literally, you see on, like, buses, there's signs that say these seats are reserved for disabled people, and if you don't let a disabled person sit here, you will be fined in accordance with, you know, this particular laws. I mean, in Australia, you have a sign that this is for disabled person. You don't actually need to go to that next step to say that, you know, if you don't offer this seat to a disabled person, then you will be fine or you'll be...
But that
be...
sort of thing is not uncommon. I mean, even in Hong Kong, my recollection, Aaron, I spent a lot of time there, I think the train seats actually quote the fine and whatever on the disabled seats, even on the trains in Hong Kong, as I recall correctly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think 200... Oh, I can't remember what it is, but I'm pretty certain it mentions right. A fine. Yeah, yeah. So,
no, because it's for me, it's more of the fact that, like, everywhere I go, and it's the other thing as well, is like, you know, because when I was in Honolulu, I went this walking track on an extinct volcano that's nearby, and there was a very, like, strict sign that's saying that, you know, if you take part in this trek, you're exercising your First Amendment right to walk wherever you want to walk, so we can't stop you from doing it, but we don't, and like we do not encourage it, nor do we discourage you from doing it. And I was kind of like, why? I mean, so what the hell is this all about?
It's a bit confusing, isn't it?
And then I kind of like, oh, it's because the way the reason for it is, A, if someone walk on that track and they fell down, they can, if the authority encourage it, then the authority is responsible for their well-being. But if you discourage them, then you are actually, it's like, how dare you stop me from actually walking on this track? You know, it's my right to do whatever I want. And it's this really kind of strange situation where, so as a result, they put up these signs at the start of the walk to say that if you do this walk, we're not responsible for anything that happens to you on this walk. But then they can't actually say that explicitly. They have to go through this kind of, you're exercising your right as a citizen to walk wherever you want. And that kind of was, for me, was a very strange kind of thing to do. Because, like, in Australia, if I want to bushwalk, I just go...
You just go where you want. within reason.
Within reason. I mean, like, but at the same time, we don't actually kind of... Well, do it at the expense of somebody else that's kind of...
Maybe another thing I'd like to talk about is the issue of right-wing organisations, but maybe we'll come back and have a chat about that in a moment. You're listening to Orange Ribbon with Howe and Alan, and we're talking about American experiences.
Made in Melbourne, for the world. Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Lenny Kravitz and American Woman, as I said earlier, continuing our American theme with titles of America or American. Just before we continue on, we like to let our listeners know of various activities coming up in the multicultural community. Arci Lesbica, which is the Italian lesbian group, have their annual Scampagnata picnic, which is coming up, 27th of February. So BYO food, play bocce, scopa, calcio, don't know what that is, or just phase about. And that's barbecue facilities are available, and it's at the Westfield Shelter. I'm just trying to find where is the Westfield Shelter. It's out in, here we are, time. It's 12 noon onwards, Yarra Bend Park in Fairfield, the Westfield Shelter, Melways Reference 30H12. So that's for the Italian lesbian group Arci Lesbica. So that's coming up on the 27th of February. Continuing our discussion with Howe and his experiences in the US, you note about a contradiction between right-wing organisations and how they corrupt the idea of individualism for their own gain. What do you mean by that?
It's basically, on one hand, everyone is allowed to act the way that they want. They can do whatever they want. But then with the right wing is, you can do whatever you want as long as we approve of it. So basically it's sort of like, you know, if you want to own a gun and shoot someone, that's fine, we approve of that. You want to have sex with another man and you're a man? No, we don't approve of that. So therefore you can't have that. You can't do that. And it is something that's kind of, and because I do visit the South often, I see it very often, and it's usually, you know, it's all kind of like cloaking, you know, it's that Sarah Palin. Anyway, sorry.
Leave that one alone.
But it's like, on one hand, they keep talking about freedom, you know, everyone has a right to do whatever they want and blah, blah, blah. And yet at the same time, they do everything in their power to limit your ability to actually do what you want.
Mm. The gun control thing really bothers me, I must confess, and it doesn't. It's not getting better.
No, it's not.
It's getting worse. You have school shootings and shopping centre shootings, and it ain't going to go away. And yet the National Riflemen's Association has got immense political power in the US, and thank God we don't have such a right-wing organisation with such power in Australia. Mm. We think we're hard done by the...
Tony Abbott.
the Christian right influences in Australia. But goodness gracious me, it's even worse in the
US. It is, much worse.
I don't suppose you would know. The Ku Klux Klan, is it still particularly active, do you know?
I think so, yeah. Mm. I mean, it's all hidden, it's all underground now, but occasionally you do hear stories about them flaring up and doing their thing and stuff, but it's...
It's interesting. I was going to move on to alpha male culture, but before moving on to that, I don't know whether you're aware of it. Did you watch the Olympics, the Winter Olympics opening ceremony the other night?
I didn't.
It was a very interesting opening ceremony, but the point I wanted to make was, to me and many of the commentators were stunned and staggered pleasantly with Katie Lang's presentation of Alleluia, and I'm familiar with that song, and she's done it many times, but it was amazing, and the ambiance, the whole feeling that where she sang it in that ceremony was just unbelievable. And yet NBC, I think it is, has been accused, and it's interesting because I've watched the NBC broadcast on the internet version. What we saw in Australia I thought was fine, usually close-up shots and long shots in the usual way with all of these people, but apparently NBC, to keep their constituents happy, their viewer constituents, virtually cut out all the close-up shots and had crowd shots or people holding candles or whatever, and only ever basically showed long shots. When you have a look at the NBC version, what went to the American people is not what we saw in Australia with all the close-up shots. I mean,
because it's Katie Lang?
Because it was Katie Lang.
Oh, God.
Because they didn't want to upset their conservative, allegedly, viewer consistency. Anyway, let's moving on. So let's talk about alpha male culture.
Well, I mean, I suppose everywhere, I mean, I'm sure Australia has this alpha male culture as well, where everybody wants to be the alpha male, you know, wants to be the number one, don't want to be the leader, anything like that. But I think with America, things do get to taken to an extreme level where everyone have to be, you know, in control of something, or they are the actual alpha male and they're disillusioned. Because, like, I think in Australia, we do have a bit of a, we tend to have a common sense approach to things, you know. While, you know, you may, I don't think you feel that if you're not number one or if you're not kind of the leader of something, that your masculinity is actually threatened. You're no longer being treated as a man. But in America, it's actually really like everyone is like this sense of masculinity is they're very they're not very confident about it, that they actually feel as if they have to constantly reassert their masculinity. And I found that a lot with the people that I meet, and the funny thing is that on one hand everyone has to be really manly man and very this hyper masculinity, but at the same time they are expected to you know, manscape and, you know, deodorize and present a very pristine kind of image, and at the same time supposed to be this caveman like as well. And so there's this contradiction, and then they just kind of pull against each other a lot, and so as a result it kind of manifests itself in a funny way. It's like sometimes I go into a restaurant and I actually order like a salad as my meal, and the looks I get from people in doing so, because apparently a real man only eats steaks and do not eat vegetables. That's why they have all these, like,
you upsize.
Yeah, and you upsize. But, you know, and yet, you know, they have all these, like, you know, bowel cancer, colon cancer, all these other, like, problem because they don't eat enough vegetables. And yet they must, you know, have this facade of masculinity where real men do not eat green things. They only eat meat and hamburgers and chips and fatty fried things.
And not quiche.
And not quiche. and it's just kind of really weird. And I can't actually understand, you know, what you eat kind of transfer to your health and to your subsequent, you know, life in later on in life with all these health problems. But, oh no, you know, we're men. We don't want people to think that we're not. So we have to eat meat and that's it. We don't eat anything else. And also the other thing is size. It's like I bought at someone a shirt and I thought that a medium size would fit them. They got really offended when I bought them a medium size shirt because they thought, no, I'm actually large. I'm actually extra large. How can you think I'm actually a medium? And I was just like, I'm sorry, what the hell? And I think in some way that's where I think a lot of the time homophobia gets fed into this, is that they actually feel that being a, you know, homosexuality, they can't actually accept it because it's just a sense of being threatening their masculinity. And I'm sure that's, you know, as a result of that. But I think we're running quite late now.
We're running out of time.
Yes.
Well, it's very fascinating listening to your views because, obviously, as you said at the beginning, it is your views, your own personal observations, and you have spent quite a bit of time there, so I guess it's quite valid for you to make those sort of comparisons and whatever. But anyway, let's call it a halt for that. And thanks very much, Howe, for giving your views anyway. And very, very interesting. Yes. All right, that's all from us at Orange Ribbon this week. Thanks to Hal for the time with us talking about that. Coming up next is Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 8 o'clock next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBTIQ multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. And also thanks to our guys on program support as well. And that's it from us for now. Bye-bye.
See ya.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.